AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett Johnson with you here on a Tuesday afternoon. Well, as usual on Tuesdays, we visit with someone from the Minnesota Reformer, great resource for the latest in Minnesota news and politics. And today we're joined by the deputy editor of the Reformer, Max Nesterak, as we're going to be talking about affordable housing, and specifically in the Bemidji area, because I think this is a crisis, at least not just in our state, but around the country, where we have a lot of these types of mid-sized regional population centers that struggle with affordable housing. But what do you do with affordable housing when those buildings aren't necessarily being kept up to standard? Now, to give you a little background on what we're talking about, we are going to be discussing this building in Bemidji that's owned by North Dakota-based Netta Property Management and an affordable housing development called Ridgeway Court. Now, unfortunately, this building has kind of gone sideways for the past few years with some really bad conditions, unfortunately. So Max is going to tell us more about that. Max, thanks so much for joining us on the show today.
Thanks for having me on, Brett.
Absolutely. So describe the conditions that tenants are experiencing right now, currently living at this unit in this building in Bemidji called Ridgeway Court.
Well, the conditions in these buildings are really some of the worst that I've seen. I've covered housing for a number of years, and it's really quite horrifying. It doesn't look like buildings that people could actually live in, and yet there are families here. So to set the scene, Ridgeway Court is a complex of affordable housing apartments, about 16 units in a few of these buildings. Half is owned by one company, half is owned by this North Dakota-based Netta Property Management. One building has already been condemned. The city decided it was too dangerous for people to live there. So in May, they revoked the rental license, deemed it uninhabitable. There's three other buildings that Netta Property Management owns in this development. And the one that I spoke to residents living in is the next one that's closest to being condemned. And in fact, there's apartments in there that have already been condemned. There's broken windows, graffiti all in the hallways. People have spray painted over the security cameras. People have ripped out the appliances. There's one unit that was taken over by squatters. No carpet, no appliances. It seems like in this unit, squatters ripped out the copper pipe, and that caused the unit below to flood twice. The first time, mold was growing, and an elderly woman who lived there with her grandson, called, complained. The landlord came, removed the carpet and the drywall where the mold was growing, but didn't replace it. Then, not too long after that, it flooded again. She had just gotten back from a medical procedure, and she said she just started crying. Everything was sopping wet and ruined. And at that point, she had to move to a hotel, and she did that with the help of a nonprofit, because the people living in these buildings are low income. There are many people who are disabled or elderly. Majority are Native American. And so, people can't afford to go in a hotel, and like you mentioned at the top, is really, really hard to find affordable housing, especially in rural areas. And so the residents told me, we would move somewhere else, but we're stuck here. We don't have anywhere else to go.
So talking about Ridgeway Court, I imagine this, like other low-income housing units, are subsidized both at the federal and sometimes even the state level. So I want to back up a little bit and talk about how this unit was originally financed, because you would think these types of conditions that you would be describing wouldn't be acceptable to a company that is, or to a company and a landlord that is receiving subsidies to help build these buildings and maintain them. So talk a little bit about how this building is financed and some of the government grants it got to help get it built.
Yeah, so these developments were financed with about, these four buildings we're talking about, were financed with about $1.7 million in loans from the United States Department of Agriculture. Now, what is the USDA doing financing housing? It turns out they have this program called Rural Development, where they finance housing projects in rural areas for workforce housing, farm workers, just people living in rural America. And they offer very low interest rate loans for a long period of time. And in exchange, the landlords must charge an affordable rent to low-income people. And so in this case, the developers received a 50-year loan at 1% interest. So the USDA told me that loan would be issued for about 10% interest at the time, but it was subsidized down to 1%. So quite a subsidy from the federal government. Now, people who are living there are also receiving assistance through Section 8, and the USDA also has its own housing voucher program. So Ridgeway Court was built as a way to address the severe lack of affordable housing in rural America, and the conditions are not acceptable. But the main tool, it seems, that at least the USDA has to enforce the code or its rules is foreclosure. And foreclosure hurts the tenants the most because they would have to move out, and the property would likely sit vacant for a very long time before the federal agency could find a buyer.
Yeah, and that certainly doesn't make things a realistic situation because, as you said, if you foreclose on the property, well, then a lot of these tenants don't have any place else to go. So what have they been doing to try to get this management company to make repairs? Have they been filing lawsuits or trying to interact with their local government to force them to make repairs? Describe that process a little bit.
Right, so this incident happened in January where someone inexplicably threw a rock through the window of the maintenance room, and it caused the freezing cold temperatures caused the water line to burst. The water sprayed onto the boiler, which caused the heating to go out. And so residents were without water and heat for several days, with temperatures dropping to as much as negative 30. And you have, again, low-income people having to go and buy cases of water. Other people were melting snow just to flush their toilets. And so this caught the attention of one person, Reed Olson, who's a Beltrami County commissioner and also runs a shelter, one of the only shelters in Bemidji and one of the only day centers for people experiencing homelessness in Bemidji. And he started talking to residents, getting to know them, and brought the case to some pro bono attorneys. Now, they approached the Bemidji city attorney, Alan Felix, and said, can you do something? Can you file a lawsuit against NEDA, make them enforce, or make them uphold the city's housing code? They tell me that the city attorney declined to do so. So a pair of attorneys at the Housing Justice Center and the Legal Aid Center of Northwest Minnesota filed a lawsuit on behalf of one tenant, Anna Dean Hooley, who's the elderly woman whose apartment was flooded twice that I mentioned earlier. And now that case, they filed an emergency tenant remedy action, asking a judge to fix the heat, to secure the broken locks on the doors, and also to fix other things like the washing machine. The landlord promised that they'd have on-site laundry, but squatters who've been allowed to just kind of take over the vacant unit busted open the washing machines to steal the quarters, and NEDA never prepared them. So a judge at one point did order the landlord to fix the lock to the outside door, and everybody involved says security is the main issue here, is that the landlord based in North Dakota does not have on-site management, so is kind of an absentee landlord, and that is what's been that's why these issues have been allowed to persist. There's just nobody on site to manage them. And when tenants call the police and the police come, the police say, oh, well, we need a NEDA manager to tell us who's trespassing. So that's where you're in this difficult situation where residents are calling the police saying, we know these people don't live here. We know they're squatters. We know they're breaking in and destroying our home. And they're seemingly allowed to stay.
Speaking with Max Nesterak, he is the deputy editor of the Minnesota Reformer. Make sure you go to minnesotareformer.com if you'd like to read about what we're talking about right now with this very ugly situation with affordable housing in Bemidji and other pieces over at minnesotareformer.com. And to me, Max, it seems like these tenants are also kind of getting the runaround from NEDA as well when they try to reach out to them and ask for repairs, where the staff will oftentimes say, oh, we're very sympathetic to what you're experiencing. We'll see what we can do. And then nothing ends up happening. And that even seems like the same case once they're demanded to by the government to make repairs as well. To me, it just seems like this is a company that's trying to do the bare minimum to keep collecting those rent checks, but also not really investing in the property. I know those are kind of my words, but that's really what I'm kind of gathering from this situation.
That's what I gathered, too, from talking to residents and attorneys and other people who've kind of watched the slow decline of this property. Now, I should mention that most of the city officials that I reached out to, the mayor, the city manager, the city attorney, the police department, did not return my calls or emails. Everybody's aware of the situation. There's been a council meeting, you know, held on these properties. They've discussed it. You know, the other thing that's perplexing about this, at least what the attorney who's representing the tenants told me, is that the judge dismissed the case even though they asked her if they could have another hearing to confirm that the landlord had done the work, had actually fixed the door, because from their perspective, every time, you know, the landlord might do a little scotch and tape fix, that's the words of the attorney, and then it would quickly, you know, be undone. And so they asked for a hearing to confirm that the work had been done. The judge just ordered the landlord to fix the lock, but then just dismissed the case and didn't call for a follow-up hearing. And when I was there, you know, months later, the door, and there's a picture of this in the story, the door was just propped open, wide open. There's just people wandering in and out who are intoxicated, young people who are intoxicated. And it's very sad because the squatters themselves, you know, are in need of services. People high on fentanyl or heroin or meth. So they're in need of services, but for the residents who are living there, they're not allowed to be there. And they want the landlord to ensure that they have a safe and affordable home to live in.
And make sure you read more about that at MinnesotaReformer.com. MinnesotaReformer.com. Yeah, it's a very sad story as we're talking through, because so many of these tenants really don't have a choice. And as you said, are also recovering addicts themselves. And you certainly don't want to see them fall back into some of those bad habits. And unfortunately, it's just not a good situation that's happening with that affordable housing unit in Bemidji again. Talking about Ridgeway Court. Max, do briefly want to touch on one other article that you were that you wrote about for today, and this has to do with workers at a Minneapolis Starbucks going on strike starting today. And today is, well, rather significant for Starbucks because it is the first day of pumpkin spice latte season. But workers at a Minneapolis Starbucks located at 4712 Cedar Avenue have walked off the job for 2 days and what was the first strike at a Starbucks in Minnesota. So, Max, this has been a little bit of a new trend in Minnesota with baristas starting to unionize at Minnesota Starbucks. And at this store, they, of course, have decided to go on strike as they have a number of complaints, including the fact that they say the company has not bargained with them in good faith and has failed to turn over information on wages and disciplinary action that they have been requesting. But I find this interesting because, as I mentioned, this is one of the first times we've seen a Starbucks get unionized in Minnesota. And right now we do have a strike going on right now. So tell us a little bit about the latest in the situation and what we've been hearing from Starbucks responding to these worker allegations.
Yeah, well, happy pumpkin spice latte season to you, Brett. So this is actually the second time these workers have gone on strike. The first was that two-day strike that you mentioned about a month ago, and today is a one-day strike on the first day of pumpkin spice being offered for the season. And they're trying to keep pressure on Starbucks for to negotiate with them. There's been more than 200 Starbucks across the country that have unionized, and yet none has ratified a first labor contract that governs wages and benefits and working conditions. And that's really the whole goal of unionizing, is to get that contract. And workers say Starbucks has not provided them with information that they need to bargain, and has also made unilateral changes to working conditions by changing the store hours without consulting the union. You're not allowed to do that under federal labor law. So they're out there striking today, and they're also calling for Starbucks to reinstate union leaders who have been fired. The union estimates more than 75 union leaders have been fired across the country. None of those were at this store in South Minneapolis, but they're showing solidarity in their demand that Starbucks immediately reinstate those workers.
You can read more about that over at MinnesotaReformer.com. MinnesotaReformer.com, as unfortunately we are just about out of time for today. But we have been speaking with Max Nesterak. He is the deputy editor of the Minnesota Reformer. Again, make sure you go to MinnesotaReformer.com, latest in Minnesota news and politics. Max, thanks so much for the time today. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
All right, let's take a break and send things back over to Matt McNeil on AM 950.